Does the Lord always choose the best man to be his leader? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson, your host for our discussion today. We continue our series on background characters of the Old Testament, and our character this time is Jonathan, son of Saul, friend of David. My conversation partners are again two members of the Walla Walla University School of Theology, Dave Thomas and Paul Dibdahl. Now, I want to ask you guys a question. If you could choose your leader, which one would you pick? Saul, David, or Jonathan? Here's your ballot. Mark one name.
That's hard to say because Jonathan never became king, so we don't know what kind of a leader he was. He would have been.
That's why I would pick Jonathan of those three.
Well, I think I would too, because of his gentle spirit.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. Yeah, that's the name that, for me, holds the most attraction.
Yeah. Yeah. But is somebody who's that deferential make a good king? You know, when you're in negotiations with your neighbor who wants to take your property, being very deferential is not
very helpful. Yeah. No. Well, for those of you who want to pursue the story of Jonathan, there are a number of contexts in Scripture that mention him. 1 Samuel 14, where Jonathan takes significant risks for Israel. We'll come back to that narrative. He goes to battle and beats up on the Philistines a bit. Then in 1 Samuel 18 to 20, we have that enormous tension where he is defending David and his father, Saul, wants to kill David. Then the 1 Samuel 31, where Saul and his three sons die in battle, and then finally David's grief for the death of Saul, his enemy, and Jonathan, his friend. Let's come back to that story in 1 Samuel 14, where you have Saul leading the people, attempting to lead the people, and Jonathan sees the... He sees the enemy up above, and it's really quite fascinating in 1 Samuel 14, verse where he talks to his armor-bearer about the possibility of going up there. And he says, Jonathan said, "Now we will cross over to those men and we'll show ourselves to them. If they say to us, 'Wait until we come to you,' then we will stand still in our place and we will not go up to them. But if they say, 'Come up to us,' then we will go up, for the Lord has given them into our hand. That will be the sign for us." So they say, "Come up." He goes up there, and this is one of those rare cases where the Old Testament is realistic in its numbers. Jonathan flails away, and it says he killed 20 of them. Now, normally, your battle accounts in the Old Testament, you kill thousands, but no, he killed 20. Well, it turns out that... Saul, as it tells out in verse 24, "Now Saul committed a very rash act on that day. He had laid an oath on the troops, saying, 'Cursed be anyone who eats food before it is evening, and I have been avenged on my enemies.'" Okay, so you pronounce an oath, a curse. It's a very stringent one. But what happened to Jonathan? He didn't hear the charge. So he found some honey
and ate it.
Now, this is a place where it seems to me the Old Testament approach to justice is not the same as we might take. If someone doesn't know about a decree or a command in our culture, how do we deal with issues of guilt and innocence in a case like that?
Well, we tend to excuse behavior if it's unknowingly inappropriate or illegal behavior. Mm-hmm. We tend to, not always, but I think there's that tendency at least.
But there is a presumption that you should know the law.
If you drive through a stop sign, the stop sign is still there even though you don't see it.
Yes.
And technically you're guilty. I remember that the very first driving test that I took. The instructor was really mean. Went through an intersection. He told me to pull over and park, and so I did. And he says, "Now look through your back window. What do you see back there?" I said, "That's a stop sign." He said, "Yes, that's a stop sign." "Did I drive through that?" "Yes." So I was guilty, even though I hadn't seen it. Now, I went back and checked it later. The branch of the tree was right down in front of it, so I had good read, but I was still guilty. Still, there is the sense in which if you're not informed, We treat them
yes.
more lightly.
We tend to do that.
In fact, Jesus has this very pointed one. The man who did what was wrong and knew that it was wrong will get a severe beating. The one who did what was wrong and didn't know it was wrong will get a light beating. Now, that illustrates the point. If it's still wrong, it still hurts. If I run over you by mistake, you're still run over.
But doesn't this also have to do with the nature of oaths in the Old Testament?
That's true.
You know, that I think they saw them as far more universally binding than mm-hmm. we do.
Mm-hmm. Now, this brings us to the rest of the story here, which is really quite a fascinating one, because Saul was wanting to go out to battle. And in verse 36, Saul said, "Let us go down after the Philistines by night and despoil them until the morning light. Let us not leave one of them." They said, "Do whatever seems good to you." But the priest said, "Let us draw near to God here." So Saul inquired of God, "Shall I go down after the Philistines? Will you give them into the hand of Israel?" But he did not answer him that day. So because of the broken oath, according to the Old Testament,
there was no word from God.
There was no word from God. Saul said, "Come here, all you leaders of the people, and let us find out how this sin has arisen today. For as the Lord lives, who saves Israel, even if it is my son Jonathan, he shall surely die." And so they cast lots, and it finally comes down
to Jonathan.
And this is what Saul says. "Then Saul said to Jonathan, 'Tell me what you've done.' Jonathan said, 'I tasted a little honey with the tip of the staff that was in my hands. Here I am, I will die.' Saul said, 'God do so to me and more also. You shall surely die, Jonathan.' Then the people said to Saul, 'Shall Jonathan die, who has accomplished this great victory in Israel? Far from it. As the Lord lives, not one hair of his head shall fall to the ground, for he has worked with God today.' So the people ransomed Jonathan, and he did not die."
Now, what does that mean, they ransomed him?
My guess is it doesn't say that they paid anything, but they simply stood up and said, "You will not do that." See, which is an amazing narrative. Saul gets credit for carrying out his oath, but Jonathan is saved because the people stand up and defend him. So it's an amazing illustration of how the people rescue this man. Jonathan, a very honest case. Now, let's come to the story in 18 to 20, because this is where you really see Jonathan's character coming up. Jonathan and David were good friends. In fact, it describes him. Chapter 18. "Saul took him that day and would not let him return to his father's house." This is David. "Then Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as his own soul. Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that he was wearing, gave it to David, and his armor, and even his sword, and his bow, and his belt. So David went out and was successful wherever Saul sent him. As a result, Saul set him over the army, and all the people, even the servants of Saul, approved." What do you think of someone who establishes that kind of friendship, that kind of bond with someone who would be an enemy of his father?
Well, David did not set himself up as an enemy, so it wasn't betrayal on Jonathan's part.
At that point, it certainly was innocent.
Just friendship.
Just friendship.
Absolutely,
yeah.
And it's the kind of friendship that I think we would all hope to experience. We'd like to have that sort of friend and hopefully strive mm-hmm. to be that sort of friend.
Mm-hmm. Dave, do you have any additions to that one?
Well, no, I'm just thinking here. I wonder if at this point there was any notion in Jonathan's mind that David could be the next king instead of him. See, mm-hmm. I mean, it may have been early enough in the story where that dynamic was not apparent. And so, this could have been more a case of just friendship. I tend to look at that story in light of the fact that of the later events where David does become anointed and head for kingship. I think it is a beautiful story. I do wonder what Jonathan was like, though. He must have been a kind and gentle person.
Well, in chapter 18, it goes on there and describes how David earned Saul's daughter, the cost of 100 foreskins of the Philistines. And in verse 29, Saul was still more afraid of David. So Saul was David's enemy from that time forward. That's the end of chapter 18. And verse 19, chapter 19, Saul spoke with his son Jonathan, with all his servants about killing David. But Saul's son Jonathan then took great delight in David. Jonathan told David, "My father Saul is trying to kill you. Therefore, be on guard."
It is a remarkable friendship.
It is an incredible friendship.
Alden, you have a little thing here on the Urim and the Thummim that I'm hoping you're going to get to.
Well, do you want to explain why you're interested in that, Dave?
Well, yeah, because, you know, it's always baffled me that here is this very direct mechanism, as it were, to get word from God, but how often does it ever get used? And that surprises me, because I would like to think that if something like that existed in the here and now, there'd be a long line of people wanting to get word from God.
Was it as simple as that, that you were always guaranteed an answer?
Or I don't know.
You inquire and not receive an answer?
Well, obviously you could inquire and not get an answer, but I mean, we don't have something as concrete as this today.
Yeah. Well, see, that was used when they were selecting who was guilty for the broken oath back there in 1 Samuel 14. Let me toss out here my rationalization as to why I think that God doesn't use it very often. If you have a direct access where you know you can get the answer, then wouldn't that be terribly habit-forming?
Well, sure. Sure. But I'm intrigued that this thing existed. I mean, it's put in there as part of the system of dialogue.
Yeah.
Maybe it was reserved only for questions of national importance. I don't know. But it's interesting that it's very plainly laid out there, but you don't often see
at
work.
One last aspect here, and we've already commented about this incredible friendship. In chapter 20, when it becomes clear that that David is at risk, chapter 20, verse 14, let me just read you here the covenant which takes place. "If I'm still alive," says Jonathan, "show me the faithful love of the Lord, but if I die, never cut off your faithful love from my house, even if the Lord were to cut off every one of the enemies of David from the face of the earth."
Mm.
The key word there is chesed, covenant loyalty, which is the best thing that you can say about God's relationship to Israel. And here you find illustrated between David and Jonathan this amazing story of chesed, loyalty, covenant loyalty. And that friendship is certainly one of the reasons why, if I were to choose, I would pick Jonathan as the king of Israel. Now, next week, we are going to turn to another wonderful woman, Abigail. I want to thank Dave and Paul for helping us with our conversations today, and my thanks to Chad Ofterhauer, our program engineer, and to all of you for listening in. For The Good Word, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.